The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
The Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part this week by Nightfall, the new drama series airing on Wednesdays at 10, 9 Central, only on History. Control the grill, control the world.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting over here at 316 Gimmick Street. I got a couple of guys working next door over the studio, and my next door neighbor's dog is barking his fool ass head off, and it just grinds my gears because that damn dog will never shut up while I'm trying to open up a can of audio whoop ass on the damnedest podcast that there ever was. Ain't never won an award, probably never will, because that damn dog won't start barking his fool head off. Hey, on a lighter note, as you listen to this podcast, it's probably December 19th or later. But as I'm recording the open to this podcast, it's December 18th, and that's my birthday. So, I just turned 53 years old today. And people always ask me, God dang, Steve, how you feel all the stuff you put your body through? And I'll tell you right now, hell, I feel like $1 million for everything I did with my damn body. Going back to my younger days, I started training with my brother, who was 2 years older than me. I was training with the junior high football team when I was in the fifth grade, started lifting weights, playing football in junior high school, 4 years of college ball, then getting into the roughest, toughest damn business a man could ever get into. The world of professional wrestling started when I was about 23 years of age, going through Chris Adams School in Dallas, Texas, making a 1990 Rookie of the Year due to a high-profile feud with the gentleman Chris Adams. And then, god dang, paying dues, going down to Tennessee, back to Texas, going to WCW, finally getting a call to go to New York, going into the WWF as a ringmaster, and then coming up with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and god dang, hell, as soon as it started, it was all over. I guess I made it about 13, 14 years, and god dang, running up and down the road, I ran hard. I ran by myself for some of those years after I started making a little bit of money. But I tell you what, back in those old days, me, Diamond Dallas Page, Mick Foley crammed in a car, riding up down the road with Bob Holly, Billy Gunn, Bart Gunn, either Kevin Nash. God dang, I had so many traveling partners back in the day, just running up down the road, having a damn blast. So here I am this morning, turned 53 years of age. And I feel like $1 million. Had a bunch of surgeries, had some fusions, had some things added, had a few things fixed. Right arm still don't straighten out worth a damn. It's hard reach for a dinner bill after eating dinner with somebody. So maybe they'll pay for the damn meal. But I tell you what, I had a good time doing what I did. I want to thank everybody on Twitter and on Instagram for sending me all the happy birthday wishes. I've gotten those things from all over the world. They started coming in last night. I probably got a couple thousand of them. I can't answer each and every one of them on an individual basis, but I thank you very much. I had a lot of fun in my time in the business, and that's what you know me most from. I appreciate all you guys that also watched Broken Skull Challenge and some of my other endeavors that I've gotten into. Hopefully when 2018 rolls around here in a couple of weeks, we got a couple more things we've been working on I can't talk about right now, but we're going to come out of the gate in 2018, and we're going to try to make this a hell of a year. Feeling good. I'm about to go down to Nevada and spend a couple of weeks down there, maybe with my brother-in-law, get out there in some four-wheelers, ride some trap lines with him, and I'm not into trapping, he is. I just want to get out in the great outdoors and just ride my buggies, ride my four-wheelers, and that's what I'm planning to do over the Christmas holidays. I hope everybody has a good Christmas. I hope you get to see your family and your loved ones, and I hope everybody travels safe. And anyway, man, I just want to say thank you to everybody out there that's followed my career from my days in a squared circle starting in 1989 in Dallas, Texas, and ending sometime around the year 2003 with the WWF, which turned into the WWE. I had an absolute blast being inside a squared circle each and every single night, learning something new, learning different tricks of the trade, tools of the business, how to work a crowd, how to sell, how to get heat, how to get over, how to shine a little bit, how to make a comeback. God dang, how to make the people happy and how to make them sad or mad. Just messing with emotions. I love what I did for a living. I had a good time doing it. Here's a story for you. I'll give you a story before I get in my podcast with the last WWE superstar, one of my favorite gimmicks going. Gallows and Anderson came by a couple weeks ago, and I talked to them, and Gallows walks in, and we had a damn refrigerator full of beer, Miller Lite, Bud Light. That's what they drink. I had Broken Skull IPAs. That's what me and Rocky Romero were drinking. And Gallows looks at me. You know, I asked for those guys specifically to be on my podcast. I've been wanting to talk to them for a long time. And Gallows looks at me, and he goes, God dang. He goes, brother, he goes, do you miss it? I said, do I miss what? He goes, the wrestling business. And I said, Gallows, I said, let me tell you something. I said, of course I miss it. I miss the adrenaline. I miss the crowd. I miss the boys. I miss the beer. I miss the road. I miss the money. I miss just the excitement, the chills, thrills, spills, going to each town every other night, living on the road, living in a hotel, hitting all the lounges after the shows, going overseas, getting in the tour buses, drinking all night, wrestling the next night, and just getting up, doing it all over again. But that's been a long time ago. So I got all that stuff out of my system. But do I miss it? Yeah, I miss it. But, you know, I've been gone for so long, you know, you can't say you miss it anymore because you have to move on in life. And God dang, you got to remember, folks, hell, I got out of business, 13, 14 years ago. It's been a long time. So I had to have moved on. And like I told Gallows, I spent a good couple years there kind of selling for a little bit because I didn't want to get out of business. That old neck stack of dimes just kind of crapped out on me. It's time to go do something else. But I had a good time talking to him, and I'm just rambling to you now. But I know that a lot of the people that listen to my podcast listen because they're wrestling fans. And I talk to, you know, people that aren't even in the wrestling business. But I always will be from the wrestling business. I don't really consider my podcast a wrestling podcast or a podcast of any sort. It's just me shooting the breeze or shooting the shit with somebody. But I know that my core fan base comes from the world of professional wrestling. And to each and every one of you, I just kind of ran over a timeline of just going up and down the road. And for that reason, most of you know who and what I am or, you know, where I came from anyway, to say thank you to all the well wishes for the happy birthdays. Had a good time in that business. Hopefully I'll talk to a lot more people from the world of pro wrestling and a lot more people from different worlds as well. And today my podcast is with one of my favorite superstars that's going today, Elias. And I've been watching this guy on television for the past couple of months. Well, shit, past couple of years, really. And he, you know, kind of evolved from the Drifter or whatever in NXT and started doing the Elias thing in a domain roster, as they would call it. And I shot him a direct message because I don't know the guy. And I said, hey, man, I said, I heard you live in Los Angeles. Do you want to be on the podcast? And hell, he don't live in Los Angeles. My information was wrong. But nonetheless, they worked a shot in Anaheim, and me and Elias hooked up. And he came over 317 Gimmick Street. And we just sat down with some neon lights. And I got a chance to get to know him a little bit. I really like what he's doing. I really like his work inside the ring. I really think he has a chance to be a huge superstar in the world of sports entertainment. I'll call it that. I'd rather call it pro wrestling. But this is me talking to Elias. Guy's got a lot of momentum going behind him right now. I wish him well, and I wish all the WWE superstars safe travels over the holidays. And, you know, I'll be doing this podcast for the next few weeks, probably out in Nevada, going down there to ride around on the trails with my brother-in-law and get some time on my utility vehicle. Got shipped up there and had a four-wheeler shipped over there. And hell, got myself an early birthday present, Christmas present, whatever. I'll tell you about it on the next podcast. But my conversation is with WWE superstar Elias. I like what he's doing. He's getting the job done. I think the kid's got a real, real bright future. But before I get to Elias, let me get you up on history's new scripted drama series, Nightfall. Set in a medieval France, tangled in politics and conflict, one headstrong and courageous Templar knight, Landry, will lead his order of warrior monks on a life-or-death mission to find the lost Holy Grail. Focusing on themes such as belief, sacrifice, politics, love, power, and revenge, Nightfall goes deep into the clandestine world of this legendary brotherhood of warrior monks to find out who these knights were, how they lived, and what they died believing. Explore the mysterious world of the Knights Templar in history's new hit drama series, Nightfall, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central, only on History. Control the Grail, control the world.
Hey, it's Jay Moore, and it is time for America's Lakers Podcast. That's right. I'm going to be hosting America's Lakers Podcast. My man, Aaron Larsoul, an analytical genius, he's going to bring to the table what I can't every Wednesday.
Aaron.
Yes.
This is the official podcast of the Los Angeles Lakers.
We are, and as the analytics expert on this podcast, I want to actually give you some props, Jay, because you were interrupting me at 42% of all sentences, and you're down to 34. What would you attribute this reduction
to? I'm down to what now?
34%.
35. I interrupted you again. There's the gold standard and the purple and gold standard.
America's Lakers Podcast with me, Jay Moore, and my man, my brother, Aaron Larsoul, every Wednesday, podcast1.com.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Yeah, man, I'm sitting right across the table from WWE Superstar Elias, one of my favorite gimmicks going. Hell, he just rolled in with his guitar, driving a Nissan SUV. Where'd your riding partners go? I thought you'd bring somebody over with you.
Yeah. I was hanging with Dash and Jason. They're going to hit up the casino. That's one of our pastimes. We hit the shows and we hit the casinos afterwards. They're probably there right now, and
what casino are they hitting up?
Yeah, I don't even know. The Hollywood casino right near the Marriott airport. We find the closest one. We go there. We'll play blackjack, poker, something like that.
There's You're a gambler?
Yeah.
What's your game? Blackjack?
Blackjack's a game, for sure.
Dude, I used to play back in the day. We used to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
And this is way back in the day when you can still get on a $2 and $3 table. You know, these days, I don't even know what you can find. 10, 20 minimum. And
You're
I'm a guy
lucky if you
never,
find
I'll never split a pair. Cheap as hell. I got a $100 limit.
Okay.
Each time they bring me a drink, I give them a good tip, bring me another one, and then if I hit my limit, then I'm done.
That's a smart gambler right there, which we are not always that. No. We'll get extreme with it sometimes. We have big nights, we have bad nights, but we keep coming back. So,
hey man, before we start rolling sound, we was talking about the change you made in your body.
Sure.
And we start talking about your workout program. But before we get into that,
yes.
Hell, we still got to break your ice.
What's up?
God dang Elias is over here. Been watching videos of you, watching you training, watching you on the indie scene, climbing up through the ranks. You've been around a while.
I have been, yeah.
You got your guitar sitting there. You're fixing to bust that thing out. I don't know what you're going to say. We're going to roll family friendly.
Yeah.
And you haven't said one single cuss word since you've been here. But, you know, we got to have an icebreaker. So I got the icebreaker right here for you. You ready for it? Here it is.
Oh, you got it.
Who wants to walk with Elias? I do, motherfucker. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay,
hell
now
yeah.
By the time my producer gets his hands on this, he'll take the motherfucker out, and from that point on, it will be family friendly. Here's the thing. I got a funny story for you before we get cranked up.
Sure.
I was watching you 2 weeks ago on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
You came out, you did that long set before you worked with Roman.
Yeah.
And I watched you. I was reading your lips. Everybody that works with me knows I have a hearing impairment. I don't hear worth a damn. You said, who wants to walk with Elias? Dude, I've been watching you for about a year, I guess, or longer.
Okay.
I always thought you were saying, who wants to walk with the lion?
Are you kidding me?
Straight up. I just shoot. I'm thinking, man, I don't really get it. I mean, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to walk with a lion? I guess he's calling himself a lion.
Right.
But I didn't put two and two together. Your name's Elias. I thought you were saying, who wants to walk with the lion? So he's calling himself the lion. He's going to eat everybody up.
Nice.
2 weeks ago, I said, or you said, who wants to walk with Elias? And I was like, you stupid son of a bitch. What were you thinking? I've been talking to myself here. So anyway, dude, I just got smartened up to what the hell you're saying.
That's how
dumb and bad of hearing I am.
It's changed, too, over the year. I've not always said who wants to walk with Elias since maybe early on Monday Night Raw, it's been who wants to walk with Elias. But for about a year, it was who wants to walk with the Drifter.
Right.
That's what it was there. So
but
it
I've been catching
up.
The older stuff. I mean,
okay.
Recent stuff.
Yeah.
I was thinking lion.
The lion.
All of a sudden you said Elias. I'm like, well, hell, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Who wants to walk with you? Yeah. I get it.
A lion walks in a jungle. He commands the jungle. I might just say that anyways now. That's pretty cool.
But, but Elias, it makes sense for me now.
Right.
You know, I want to bring one other story up for you.
Sure.
Because when you started off, or one of your names was Elias Sampson.
Right. Yeah.
Back in the days when I was trying to get into business, well, I was in USWA, I was in Tennessee, and I was trying to think of a cool name. Mm-hmm. When I first started, I started off with my shoot name, Steve Williams. And I couldn't be Steve Williams because there's already Dr. Death Steve Williams. Right. And so before, you know, Dutch Mantel gave me Steve Austin and Stunning Steve Austin and all that, I was trying to think, well, you know, at the time I was a little bit jacked up, you know, just football playing at North Texas State University. an average physique. Not a good enough physique to hang, you know, a name on.
Okay.
Like the name I'm about to give you. One of the names I was going to use for myself, because you've probably been through this, Samson St. Clair. I always thought St. Clair had a little bit of je ne sais quoi to
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
And then you got the Samson, but I was like, no, man, if I name myself that, I'm going to have to live up to that damn physique.
Yeah.
And so, and I didn't have the genetic structure to do it anyway, but that was one of the names that crossed my path.
Sure.
What led you to come up with the Samson and then drop the Samson?
So coming up with Samson, it came from the Bible. Of course, the character of Samson, right? And when I was coming up with names, I came up with a bunch of them. Joseph Samson, Abel, Elias Abel. I put in Cash. I like Johnny Cash, if that's not apparent. And so I came up with that. Samson, I remember I got a list of maybe like five or six names, and Elias Samson was the one that stood out to me the most. So I said, that's my name. And the man in charge at the time said, I hate that name. It's not... I don't like it at all. I remember Gerald Briscoe, when he first heard it, he said, well, they'll change that soon enough. And I said, okay. But I just liked it. I still like it. I think it could come back someday. I'm going to throw that out there. But so, yeah, sure enough, and dropping the name, I'll be honest with you, was not my call. I got up there, got to Monday Night Raw, and the Drifter, no longer call myself that. At least I can't refer to myself as that. And, Samson dropped as well. So, and these are things I just show up to Monday Night Raw and they say, hey, just so you know, here's the deal now. So, okay. Fair enough, man. I'm still going to be me. And, as long as they're not trying to change who I am or who my character is, which they're one and the same anyways, as far as I'm concerned, I'm cool with calling me whatever you want to call me.
Hey, man, you got a good physique on you. Coming up in high school, are you from Pittsburgh?
I'm from Pittsburgh, PA, yeah.
Football player, track background, baseball, what?
Baseball guy. I was a baseball guy my whole life.
Really? What position?
Yeah. So in the in-house teams, I was always like a shortstop pitcher kind of guy. And then on the traveling teams, I was always center field, right field. I had a good arm on me, and I could run fast, so...
As far as pitching, did you have any junk, or did you just straight fastball?
No, I had some junk in there. I could throw a good curveball. Yeah, curveball, fastball, split finger, occasional knuckleball. I'd throw those in there. But, yeah, pitching wasn't my thing. It was just in the in-house, there's only so many people that are, you know, good enough to be pitchers.
So that was high school. So. Did you go to college?
High school, yeah. So I went to college. I went to Penn State. I went 2 years there, 2 years at the local, and so I continued to play baseball there, had some shoulder issues, just kind of pushed it off to the side. But by that point, I had known I wanted to be – I mean, I known wrestling was my path at that point. So
were you on a full ride at Penn State?
No. It wasn't even for baseball. I went there.
Oh, you just went to school?
Yeah, I just went to school.
What were we going to major in? What were we going to do? What was your plan? Okay, before you want to be a pro wrestler? Yeah.
Well, I had always wanted to be a pro wrestler.
Okay.
But my dad said, you get a degree, you can go do whatever you want.
Right.
It just so happened, as I am getting a degree, I'm leaving a Monday Night Raw, and there's a flyer on my window in Pittsburgh, and it says, come see Matt Hardy and AJ Styles at Monroeville Sports Center in Pittsburgh, PA.
Yeah.
So I said, man, this is awesome. Matt Hardy was on a break from the company for whatever reason. I go there. I see indies up close in person for the first time ever, and I'm like, wow, this is how... You do it, because I had very little knowledge of anything outside of WWE, WCW, ECW coming up as a fan. And I was diehard that, but I didn't know nothing about the indies. And I went to that show. I saw those guys. I asked one of the wrestlers after how you get into it. He introduced me to another wrestler. His name was Shirley Doe. Talked to him. He said, hey, come out here. We'll figure something out and we'll start training. And it was like maybe 2 weeks after that show that I started training.
Hey, man, talk to me. You just said you're a Johnny Cash fan.
Yeah.
I was reading about a guy that trained you, Shirley Doe.
Yeah.
It's almost like, with all due respect to Shirley Doe, almost like the Johnny Cash song, A Boy Named Sue.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, fair
I was
enough,
like,
right?
Man, I said, I never heard of this chick.
Yeah.
So, but it's a guy.
Yeah, it's a guy.
And okay, and like I said, I'm not dissing him. So.
No, sure. Hey, listen, I couldn't even tell you where the guy's name came up. I know he was trained by Dory Funk Jr., who's
awesome.
Fantastic, right? And he's just one of those guys that I always felt like, and I still feel like, he understood wrestling. He understood psychology and things like that. And, you know, he's still out there doing it now, and he was a great guy. So I got nothing but respect for how, right. he helped me along.
And how long were you in the school or the training system?
Yeah, so about a year and a half, if you can believe that. Sounds like a long time to be training, right?
Well, how often were you training?
Like 4 days a week.
Yeah.
I was going in there 4 days a week. And I remember about 6 months in, he was like, you could probably start doing some indies here. But there was a specific company, IWC, out in Pittsburgh that I wanted to wrestle for. They were not having any open spots. So I just bid my time and I kept training until I debuted there. And I think it, you know, all worked out for the best in that regard.
Man, I tell you what, I was watching some of your training and watching some of your matches, and obviously this is a pretty good ways back. And so you looked really mechanically sound from a young age. So I guess a year and a half of training or whatever it was paid off.
Sure. I mean, we were in there having matches every night pretty much, you know, working on anything we wanted to work on. And, you know, when you're new, you want to learn all the moves and all the ways to hit the ropes, and you want to try everything out. And there's still that in me, of course. But, I was just eager to get started, and I wanted to do my debut right, even though it was my very first thing, where some people are just like, just get me out there and get started.
Right.
I was a little different in that way, but it's kind of freaking me out that you saw all this stuff and you did all your research.
I want to know who I was talking to. Like, when I sent you a direct message on Twitter, however we started talking, and then we got a phone number, I said, man, I love the gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
I like your work. Yeah. I like what you're doing. So I said, man, I'd be neat to talk to this guy. I like the guitar stuff.
Sure.
I like the character stuff. You know, I think it's good stuff. So I said, hey, man, I'm enjoying it. So I want to sit down and talk with this guy. So I had to do something. But when you were wrestling as Logan Shulo.
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Logan Shulo. That's right.
Okay, so what was kind of the gimmick? Because you had a little bit of a persona.
Yeah.
You've always been well-spoken.
Yeah.
And now you have a direction with Elias.
Right.
But what were you thinking when you were Logan Shulo?
It's all been the I like to think Elias is kind of the culmination of everything I ever wanted to be and who I ever wanted to be. So very happy with that. But, yeah, I mean, I can recall at one point I was the front man, Logan Shulo. I come out with a mic stand. In my mind, I was this eclectic front man rock star. And then as it went on, I became Heavy Metal Jesus.
Stop on Heavy Metal.
You got it.
I saw that. I said, holy shit.
Yeah.
That may be one of the greatest gimmicks I've ever heard of. Who come up with that?
So it was a guy named Michael Fassad out in Pittsburgh. One time we're training. I just look like it. I look like Jesus. You know what I mean? And he said, Heavy Metal Jesus. He called me that. And I said, that's the coolest nickname I ever heard. I'm just going to go with that. That's cool. I'm going to keep that. And so sure enough, I started incorporating that, and I would say Bible verses in my promos or do little tricks where I turn water into wine, but all in the promos and stuff like that. So I had fun with
that. So you popped on it like I did.
Oh, yeah, of course. Heavy Metal Jesus, come on, man.
Well, speaking of heavy metal, and I know kind of what you're doing, at least in the ring, is more kind of country-based, or just, it could be anything-based, but it's slow and melodic.
Blues country.
Exactly, yeah. So what is your flavor of music?
I got to say that. Blues country, Eric Clapton. I could sit there and listen to Eric Clapton, who are we talking about, Stevie Ray Vaughan, B.B. King. Those kind of guys just jam on the guitar. I just love that sound with a little blues background and some soloing over it. That is like really what I like. But I'm into all things, man. Classic rock. I got a Chris Stapleton shirt on right now. I love Chris Stapleton. So, yeah.
You ever heard of an old blues guy? He was the kind of guy that Stevie Ray got a lot of his sound from. Lonnie Mack.
I heard of him. Yeah.
I'm turning you on to that. Sure. Man, I tell you what, a band I just got turned on to. I was on my Pandora radio. I was on Boston radio. There's a band called Redbone.
Redbone?
Yeah. All dude, right. Back in the 70s. And it was Lolly and Pat Vegas. And I guess Lolly, the lead singer, well, they both sang, but Lolly's dead now. But God dang, they were Native American and in part Mexican. Okay. So that's how they came up with the Redbone sound,
sure.
The Redbone name. Born out here in Calinga, California. But dude, you got to check out some of their stuff. But that's another one I'm going to drop on you. It's just like, I think one of the songs, Come and Get Your Love, was used on one of the movies that Batista was in, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
I never saw the movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got into these guys. So they're not blues based, But you talk about tight and just good musicians.
Yeah.
And they're like a band that should have had a better run than they did.
Okay.
You know, kind of like a lot of boys. Sure. God dang, that guy should have had a better run than he did. Up and down, run up and down the indie circuit when you first got in.
Yeah.
I never like to ask for numbers. I won't ask for current numbers.
Sure.
But let's go back to the beginning day numbers, because when I was working in USWA back in the early 90s, dude, I was making $15 and yeah. $20 a night, and we were probably driving 400 miles round trip.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't buying anything new. I was hitting every all-you-can-eat buffet you can find.
I mean, I could tell you. I got no problem telling you what I made or
no, yeah, yeah. Talk about the early days. So, like, what's that scene like? What were you making?
First match, I'll never forget this one. I came to the back, and the promoter said, this is my debut. Promoter said, okay, first one's on the house. Now we'll see what's going to happen. You know, okay, I don't quite feel like a professional wrestler yet, right? But you know what? From there on out, it was probably $45, $50 a night. That's about average for me. I was never like a name on the indies by any means, so I was never pulling in the couple hundred dollars that some of the main guys did.
Right.
So, and I always had little side jobs to keep
me going.
What
were you doing on the side? What are your qualifications in life?
So I did get a degree in business management. After all that. Yeah, 4-year degree.
Awesome.
Business management. Never once put it to use. I would work in gyms. I'd be either like a trainer or just help at the gym or something like that. Anything that fed my ability to get in better shape, get dates, wrestling, travel, anything that was flexible like that, I was working with that. So.
What kind of jobs were they?
Training clients, things like that. You know, just cleaning up at the gym, working the front desk at the gym. I had like a retail job for a short period of time where I stocked in the back room. Like I said, I never put that degree to use, but I still got it. So
when you got it first, when you first started in the ring and you're out there on the road, the first one was on the house, they started paying you.
Yeah.
Now, how did you go about that? When you started, you were a babyface.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So how are you going about, you know, setting up these matches? I mean, how was your training with respect to, okay, the guy said you was ready to go.
Sure.
Was you good at hearing the high spots, going with the flow? Did you, you're going to shine a little bit, then you're going to sell, then you'll make this comeback, then you're going to go home?
I could tell you this. I never called it in the ring until I went to Rip Rogers.
And when did you encounter Rip Rogers?
So
I love that guy.
Yeah, no, he is fantastic, man.
Yeah.
So on the indies, whatever, you know, I'm one of these guys, I don't know how to say, I never thought I knew it all. So I always wanted to learn more. And Rip just so happened to be a guy that I heard about, I researched. He just so happens to have taught many people that are great.
Yep.
And I said, you know what? When I get weekends where I'm not working, I'm going to drive to Louisville and work with Rip, learn from Rip, do what I got to do. And sure enough, he took me in. He taught me all kinds of cool stuff. And one of it was just calling it and a psychology to calling it and working body parts and things like that, you know. So, but from that point on, then it was fun to do things like that. Then it was starting. Nobody ever broke it down for me like that. Shine. Heat, come back. It was like, I hate to bury anything, but it was just like, let's just sit here and talk about what we want our match to be.
Right.
And there's something to that as well, but, you know.
But the thing about Rip was, or Rip is, sometimes when he's good on his Twitter timeline and I'm listening to him or just reading his tweets,
yeah,
he has a very unique way of making things very simple and clear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the business is very complex. You can break it down and it's simple, but when you put it all together,
no, yeah, of course,
at the high level, it can be pretty damn tricky because you're trying to manipulate people's emotions. You're trying to get in their head psychologically.
Yeah.
You're trying to tell a story. Things got to ebb and flow, give and go, give and take, and all that. But when Rip breaks it down, he makes it very easy to understand.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. He's really an eye opener for me, as far as just if I think about it simply and then add the ingredients that really matter, that I don't want to even talk like I know. Look who I'm talking to here. But I'm just saying, you know, intensity, emotion, you know, swerving things back and forth. That's where you get into the – because they always say, like, at least at the Performance Center where I spend a lot of time, you know, anybody can learn those moves. Yep. But then it's to have that extra little bit that makes you stand out, special, things like that. So that's Rip was the first person to open my eyes to that kind of thing. But again, I was a fan my whole life anyway, so I always knew there was something different between Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, these guys than other guys.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, like going to a wrestling school or getting in the business, it's just like going to any damn college, getting the same degree, with, like your business administration. Yeah. You know, you're not currently using that, but you get taught the same tools as everybody else is getting that same degree. So everybody gets the wrestling degree,
right?
But it's what you do with respect to that is, you know, how far and what you end up doing in the business. You all basically taught the same. You just got to make yourself unique, stand out, and do something different to really get that run.
Yeah.
We was talking about your weightlifting program.
Sure.
What are you doing, dude? You're a little bigger up close than I thought you was.
Thank you very much. Yeah. All the things. So let me first off, because you mentioned how I was, not in the best shape right when I got started, which is very true. But when I was 16, and I made up my mind I'm going to be a WWE wrestler, I was 165 pounds or something like that, if that. So I just knew I got to get bigger. I got to eat a lot of food, lift a lot of weight, that kind of thing. And I remember maybe when I was 20, 21 or something like that, a good friend of mine came up to me and said, dude, you're fat. And I needed to hear that. I needed to hear that.
Honesty is a real motivator sometimes.
Yeah, right. And by an average human being standards, I was probably still in good shape. They probably thought I was just some big guy. But I knew. And so started to take the diet more seriously, training more seriously. I had a great friend as a bodybuilder out in Pittsburgh. His name's Brian Hankinson, and he would go on to teach me about diet, supplementation, lifting, things like that. And then, if I'm ranting, I'm sorry, but then I get to the Performance Center, and Sean Hayes, I don't know if you know who.
I haven't met him yet, but I've seen him do the Stone Cold impression.
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's a fantastic guy, too. But, yeah, Sean Hayes, he's just another level of training there. He's all about athletes. He understands us and how our bodies work, how we need to recover, how we should train. That guy's just taking me to the next level. So
tell me about what you're doing. You know, you're trying to stay in ring shape. You look good.
Of course.
Are you doing a lot of the Olympic lifts? Because I know, Cena, there's kind of a movement in there. A lot of the guys doing the Olympic lifts. Yeah. I was never into them, man. I was just, your basic powerlifting movements, bodybuilding movements. That's it. So with respect to that, what are you doing?
Well, so that it seems like there's like a CrossFit movement going on right there. And I'm not into that, but I do get into bench presses, deadlifts, cleans, clean and press. I definitely like heavy shrugs, but I still got that bodybuilder mentality in me where you want to push heavy weight and you want to get the reps and the blood going and things like that. But I split it up in between 3 days. I got an upper body day, lower body day, active recovery day. I repeat that, and then I take Monday night's the big performance night, so I take Mondays off the gym.
Okay, I understand the first 2 days are very clear, but what's the active recovery day?
Active recovery day will be like, I'll go through like a weight training circuit for the whole body. Mm-hmm. Deadlifts, right into bent over rows, to cleans, to presses, to squats. Knock that out, circuit maybe 5 times through. I'll hit some abs, core. I'll finish with arms, just kind of hit the whole body, get it filled with blood. You know, recovery, but also get an arm workout in there too.
That's just basically filling the muscles full of blood, getting a pump.
Exactly.
No sweat.
Yeah. The upper body day, the lower body day, that's where you put in the real stress on the body, I guess you want to say.
Okay. Yeah. Give me some numbers, dude. I mean, just throw some casual, workout sets for bench, deadlift, squat.
So I'm probably right around 405 bench press is probably
stout.
What I'm working with right there. Just this past week, I did 365 four times, so that's right about what I'm working with there. Deadlift, I get up to around 500 pounds. Yep. Squatting, probably right around the 365 to 405 mark in there. Try not to do anything that I think I'm going to blow my back out too much on or anything, but that's about the numbers I'm working with.
Those are good numbers.
Three main ones.
What are you doing nutrition-wise?
That is, if my friends asked me, they said, if you go to Steve's and they got food for you, I have no idea how much you're going to eat. So I'm eating all the time. I keep it to carbs and protein all during the day. And then normally after my match or later on in the night, if it's off day or something like that, that's when I'll get in my fats and proteins. I split up that way, but it's like egg whites, oatmeal, chicken, rice, beans, sweet potatoes. I'll get lamb in there, beef in there. That's it, man. I try to keep it pretty clean throughout the week. I'll have my days where I'll get some pizza in there, things like that. But
man, a lot of people think you can't eat clean on the road, but you can. I mean, you go to Denny's, Waffle House, IHOPs, and
that's exactly the places I go.
Because I know you ain't packing all that stuff.
No, I'm not one of those guys. So I'll go there. I'll go to Chipotle. I'll get the plain white rice with the chicken. So they're not adding any of the seasoning or stuff like that. Denny's, that's exactly where I go. IHOP, Waffle House, you can get, you know, steamed hash browns.
So how many calories you figure you're getting in a day?
If I had to guess, 4,000.
Yes.
That's a guess. Remember, yeah. Rough guess right there.
But that adds up. I mean, if you're eating all the time, you're eating good.
Oh, yeah. No, eating all the time, eating good. Then, of course, you know, the training, the actual wrestling, the performing takes it out of you, too. So you're burning calories.
Dude, how old are you, 30?
30, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, dude, you're still bulletproof. You're still getting away with all the stuff. Sure. Hey, you started, what, when you was 20?
I believe I was 21 when I had my
21.
First match. Yeah.
So, any major injuries? How you feeling?
Yeah. I feel great right now. I did break my tibia in NXT at one point. I was wrestling Andrade Almas, who is the champ right now in NXT. And anyways, just a freak accident, man. I gave him the stun gun, no less. Hot shot him on the ropes. I went down. Bounced off the ropes, came down 2 feet right on my leg, and just cracked it right in half, man. And I remember feeling it and knowing that it hurt really bad. Went to stand up on the ropes, pulled myself up on the ropes. I took one step. I'm sure there's video footage out there, too. I took one step and just went down, and the ref's like, yeah, that's it. Let's call it.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. Hey. Here's some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Here's another one. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. Here's another one. Placing your key fob to your chin will increase its range. It's weird, right? Well, are you ready for one more tip you might not know about? Here it is. True Car also helps people get used cars. That's right. True Car ain't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with True Car, users can see what others paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. And don't forget the car insurance for that vehicle. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right, guys. Save hundreds of dollars in car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Respect is not given.
A hearty welcome to Steve Kerr.
What a thrill to have listened to you all these years.
It is earned.
He's Basketball Hall of Famer John Calipari.
You still have a great voice of all time.
Sound of Success, the Dick Enberg Podcast.
Tennis Hall of Famer Billie Jean King.
I just hope everyone listening understands what an icon you are.
Exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet.
He's my all-American friend Bill Walton.
Dick Enberg, I love you.
Get episodes every Thursday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Hey, man, obviously Dusty was around back then, right?
Dusty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was your relationship with that guy?
Man, Dusty was, he was great, man. I feel myself get a little choked up thinking about Dusty.
Hey, man, that dude was, my mother went to high school with Dusty Rhodes. Now, he was a senior when my mom was about a freshman in Austin, yeah. Texas. Dustin and I were born in the same hospital there, Seton Hospital in Austin. And I was watching TV. Well, hell, it was in Edna. I done told this story many times, but that was when Dusty was bleeding in the ring at Sam Hughes Coliseum.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew I wanted to be a wrestler. That's way back in the day. So anyway, you know, getting to know Dusty, and when I was, you know, in my, you know, USWA days, Dustin was probably in the business about a year and a half before me. Mm-hmm. Got a chance to watch him come through. Then when I got to WCW, man, we started, you know, tearing the house down. I always liked working with that guy. And but Dusty, you know, the American Dream. I mean, dude, he's one of the greatest of all times.
Yeah.
So talk to me about him.
Yeah. So gotta say, Dusty is one of these guys that, and my story is probably not rare, but he believed in me from the moment I walked in the door at the Performance Center. And for the first day I went up, and I remember we did these presentation classes there, more or less promo classes, right? And I brought to him this character called the Judge. And it was very similar to what I am now, just a lot darker. And I had a hat and a ring, whatever, and I had my guitar. And instead of singing songs, I would tell stories and I would strum in between or something. And he just... He loves that old Western stuff, you know, and it, you know, those kind of things, and that Clint Eastwood, and so, and he just loved it from the second he saw it, and I felt like he was on my side from the time there till the time I got on NXT TV until the time he passed, you know. And I throw this out there a little bit, but I kind of feel like I was one of his last real people that he put investment in and time in and cared for and pushed for to be on TV. Before he passed, I think I was like one of the last guys that he really was pushing for it. Triple H would have to like verify that for sure, but that's how I feel.
Yeah.
So I got, man, just what a great guy. Just all, you know, people talk about him as a performer and a wrestler and a talker, and he's amazing. And then to just know him on that level and the way he treated all of us at NXT. And like I said, my story's probably not rare. There's probably 100 of us that feel like, oh, he believed in me, and he found a special thing in you, and he knew how to bring it out of you. And yeah, I got nothing but great stuff about Dusty.
How did you get the call up to go to NXT?
To like, as far as getting signed to NXT?
Yeah, just going over and getting in the Performance Center, whatever happened.
Okay, so getting into wrestling, the one place I wanted to be my whole life was WWE. So a few years in, I did one of those paid tryouts at FCW, got told no. A year later, did the same thing, got told no. A year later, I did the same thing, and I got told no again. So I started doing extra gigs. I must have done 50 and 20 different cities, man, showing up extra there. I'm trying to pick everybody's brain, probably annoying to some people, you know what I mean? Asking questions, everybody, but respectfully doing that kind of thing. I know I got asked to do a dark match with Dean Ambrose before he was in the Shield. This is in Erie, Pennsylvania. And I did that. I remember I came to the back. Pat Patterson told me I looked like an athlete. And William Regal came up to me and he said, good job, good job. 2 weeks later, they called me and they said, hey, we want to fly you to Florida for first ever paid tryout, where they will... You know, they'll provide you with some money to get down there, and we'd like you to do that. I said, of course, of course. I go down there. I spend 3 days doing that tryout, and I still got told no. Yeah, I got told no. I know. And then, so if you could believe that. So I'm back on the indies doing my thing. About 6 months later, I'm still doing extra work. I'm showing up every time. William Regal came up to me. This is again, it was another dark match I had done, but not with anybody on the roster, just another extra guy. And William Regal came up to me, who had stayed in contact with me the entire time. And he said, hey, there's hirings coming up. If I get a chance to put a word in, I'm going to put your name in there. Sure enough, Canyon Seaman called me a few weeks later and said, we want to offer you a contract. So quite a few times I got told no. But
I tell you what, when Pat Patterson says you look like an athlete, that's a compliment, because, you know, Pat, God dang, that guy's been around the horn, has helped so many guys, and has helped me. And he loves the business so much. His enthusiasm and passion for the business is just – it's infectious. Yeah. And I love this. I love it anyway. But when you talk with Pat and he's going through, you know, he's talking about a finish.
Sure.
You know, it just goes crazy. And then he's just a wonderful guy. And then, you know, William Regal, my old travel partner.
Of course. Yeah.
God dang, man. We had some times down there in Kissimmee when we was doing those WCW TV tapings. That's a whole other story for a different podcast. And we're talking about you. But he's a guy, you know, that when he says, hey, man, you know, he believes in you, or he's going to, he gives you his word. He's the guy that follows up on that.
Yeah.
And he's a tremendous asset to the company. So that's very, very cool. When you got down there, you signed up, you get the contract.
Mm-hmm.
talk to me about, was there an intimidation factor, or are you walking on eggshells over there because you're doing your thing on the indie scene? Yeah. They done told you no three or four times, yeah. And now they bring you in.
Right.
Are you nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs? Was it just competitive from the word go? Are you trying to be alpha? What's the story?
So, yeah, I went in there knowing that there was people, you know, in the building who saw my tryout and said no. You know what I mean? Yep. So I went in knowing that, you know, in my mind, in my heart, whatever, I had a lot to prove. And yeah, I don't want to throw any names out.
No, yeah, yeah.
You know, but there was times where you did feel like you had to walk on eggshells. But it was always just show up, work hard, see what I can learn today, see what I can get better at today. And then I, you know, so that was the start of the Performance Center. That was like, you know, coming in there, and I remember too hearing there were certain guys there that had been there like 3-4 years, and I'm going, oh, wow, that's such a long time. I can't believe it. And sure enough, I spent 3 years there, and I'm like, you know, so feels like how did the time pass there, you know? So
you've paid your dues, and you've been very patient, but you've stuck with it.
Yeah.
And you got to. You got to pay some dues.
Always knew that, right? I still got to pay dues. I ain't where I got to be yet, you know?
How you liking being where you're at right now?
I got no complaints, man. So as far as Monday Night Raw goes, I'm just given an incredible amount of freedom to be who I am with everything I do, with what I do in the ring, with what I do on the guitar, with what I say in my promos. And you know, I don't take that for granted for a second, cause I know it ain't always like that with everybody, but I swear I showed up to Monday Night Raw, and the kind of stuff I do on Monday Night Raw, I never did in NXT actually, but what I do on Monday Night Raw is what I've done on the live events for a year. Introduce myself, tell a little story, play some guitar, sing a song about the town or whatever's going through my head, you know? So it's almost like they took my live event stuff and they said, let's put that on TV. And that's exactly what I do. And, you know, from the same thing you see me do on TV, I do some kind of version of that in every city I go. I switch it up depending on what I'm feeling that night. So, but I got no complaints, man. I like it. I'm hoping I'm on an upward progression right now and doing what I can to stand out.
You started off as a baby. You're working heel right now. Yeah. Although they could take you however they wanted to. Yeah. I think they're taking you as a heel.
Yeah.
It seems to be the direction you're going. You like that?
I do. Yeah, of
more
course.
Freedom.
More free. You know, I couldn't even tell you because by the time I got on NXT television to now has been almost 2 years. And I've been a heel that entire time, including a few months before I got on NXT TV. And what I've been doing is singing songs about how much I hate this place or that person or whatever it is. And then I get in the ring, you know, in my own way, be aggressive, do these kind of things, intensity. So I almost have no experience being a babyface in this version of myself,
right?
For lack of better terms. So, and I like what I'm doing right now. So I like I said, if I'm a heel right now and I feel like I am and that's how they take me and that's good, I like it and I'm having fun with it. And I keep that going for as long as I can.
We're at my place. It's 317 Gimmick Street. It's 10:20 p.m. You just got over here about an hour ago. Y'all worked the Anaheim Pond tonight.
Yeah.
How was the house?
Oh, house was good tonight, man. I couldn't tell you any numbers or anything like that, but I just know sitting in the ring looking out at everybody is pretty good tonight, yeah.
Who'd you work?
Jason Jordan.
How'd it go?
Very good. Yeah, very good.
How much time I give you?
You know what? Again, the opposite of TV on these live events, kind of freedom to do whatever, man.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
It's, you know, within reason, you know.
I got you. I don't want you to go out there and do 30. But, yeah.
Exactly. But you know what? If we did, you'd probably be all right with it. And then they'd say, hey, maybe shorten it tomorrow
right,
or something.
Right.
But I say we probably went about 12 minutes bell to bell. But I was probably doing my promo for 5 minutes prior or something, you know.
What kind of reaction did you get?
Man, it feels like it's growing every week. And then I don't know if the Roman thing did something for me, got more eyes on me, whatever it did. But even just this past weekend, you know, they'll just introduce me and the crowd will just take over, you know, so it's good. And tonight I did a version of, you know, the song Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge.
Dude, I'm all about it.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So I said, you guys aren't going to get me down tonight. I'm in a good mood. I'm just going to play something. You guys just listen. Just listen. I start playing. As soon as I go into sometimes I feel like I don't have, they hated every second of it, man.
They did.
They hated every second of it. And you guys know this song, right? Yeah, they love it, right? Well, then let me sing it. You know, so. And then, you know, I end up switching the lyrics up on them, and it was a good, fun time. But, it was, yeah, it's good. It's good.
Have you ever busted out the guitar and started singing, and they pop for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's happened because, giving away, like, my own little secrets here is how I feel. But there's been times, you know, Nashville, I could think of, Australia, it's happened a couple times where I'll say, oh, yeah, I wrote a song for everybody here tonight. And boo, but then they'll start chanting a song. And in Nashville, it happened to be Freebird. They start chanting Freebird. You guys want to hear Freebird?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'll play Freebird if everybody sings along. And, you know, I should show you videos of this or something. Like, actually, yeah, I did it in England. I got great video for you. But so I play Freebird for a little bit. They're clapping, everybody's singing. And then I'll switch it on them. I'll turn the lyrics on them some way or another to where they get pissed off. Australia and the UK, it was Wonderwall from Bioasis. And, you know, these very notable classic rock songs, I could just kind of knock them out with if somebody does request them. You know what I mean? So,
what are you going down the road listening to right now? Because, you know, back in the day for me, man, it was Keith Whitley, George Strait, George Jones, Merle Haggard.
He's a great
cats like that. Yeah, God dang, Keith Whitley, if that guy was still around, it'd be unbelievable. But stuff like that, but older school stuff. What are you riding down the road? Let's do it. And dude, Stevie Ray Vaughan is my number one guy.
He's your number one? Yeah, I love Stevie Ray Vaughan. I got him in the mix. Bruce Springsteen, are you a Bruce guy?
Dude, I never got Bruce.
Really?
And dude, I know he's a worldwide megastar, but I didn't get it.
I love Bruce, man. Yep. I love his voice. I love his stories. I love where he's coming from. And that's it, man. I feel his music, so I've got him up and down the road. Me and Big Cass, when we used to travel together, it was just Bruce nonstop because he's a huge Bruce fan as well. But I got him. I got, you know, I already mentioned Eric Clapton. He's a big guy I listen to all the time. But I'll get, you know, Alice in Chains in the mix.
Dude, Alice in Chains, for me, when the grunge hit, Alice in Chains was the number one. You know, Pearl Jam.
Sure.
God dang, with the other ones. But it was Alice in Chains.
Sure. Soundgarden, Nirvana.
Yeah, Soundgarden was like number two or three. And Pearl Jam was in there, but Alice in Chains was number one.
Yeah.
But dude, Layne Staley, God dang, that dude had that haunting voice.
I know.
And God dang, if it didn't OD, it's like tragic.
I hear
and
you.
And then, what was it, Mike Starr, the bass player?
That's the bass player? Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Done. But yeah, they were cranking out some good stuff. When did you pick up the guitar? When did you start playing?
Yeah, 15 years old is when I started. And I remember it just, I feel like I'm saying his name a million times now, but Eric Clapton, I got into him right around that age. I used to fall asleep listening to his live stuff at night. And my dad just noticed that. And for Christmas one year, he got me an electric guitar. I had never wanted to play or anything like that. He got it for me. And I just started teaching myself, started looking things up and listening and, you know, of course I had to learn Eric Clapton songs right off the bat. I wanted to play just like him. So Change the World and Layla and Sunshine of Your Love and all these, you know, Cocaine, all these songs. And, so I feel like I've got the whole Eric Clapton, you know, collection down just from that. But yeah, that's how it started. 15 years old. My dad just gave me a guitar and start playing.
Dude, how you teach yourself how to play guitar? Because my dad, because I wanted to be a guitar player back in the day. I didn't have any musical ability. And it was actually my stepdad who I look at as being my real dad. So I didn't inherit his musical gift.
Okay.
So anyway, you know, He plays in a country and western band. He sells insurance. He plays on the side, lead guitar.
Yeah, nice.
And he's good. So I figured he'd, you know, teach me how to play. Well, I didn't stick with it. Dude, if you don't stick with anything, you ain't going to learn anything, right?
Yeah.
So I figured I'd try the bass guitar. It's got two less strings. It'll be easier. I got a bass guitar. I didn't practice. I sucked. They weren't going to buy me a drum kit. I couldn't sing. I said, I'm out of the music business before I even got in it, right?
Sure.
So how do you teach yourself how to play shit? Because, dude, when I'm watching, about the pentatonic scale or arpeggios. Dude, sure. You know what I'm saying? All that stuff.
Yeah, so.
And because I know a lot of people that play badass guitar.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how you would teach yourself.
So I could tell you right now, I don't know any of that stuff. Like, I can't say, like, here's the fifth scale of the arpeggio.
Right.
And like, I could probably play it, but I don't know nothing about that. What I did was on the internet, it was called Tabs. It's like learning by numbers. And I would go find a song that I liked, and it would say, put your first finger here, second finger there, that, strum like this, and just repetition, repetition, repetition. All of a sudden, I know, oh, that's what that sounds like. Okay, this is what this sounds like as I move my hands around. Then I start just testing it. What does this sound like? You know, 15 years of doing that kind of stuff, just sitting in your room or sitting, you know, outside on the porch, messing around with the guitar, you just pick up the way things are supposed to sound. You just kind of adapt to it. And you know what? There's a chance that it was kind of in me.
Yeah.
Because once I picked that up, I picked up the piano and the drums and a little harmonica and things like that. So, maybe it was in me already to kind of have some sort of musical stuff. But, it feels like once that opened up the gates in my brain or however it worked.
Dude, I started smiling when you said the harmonica because that gig you guys did.
Those guys are good, huh?
Those
guys are good.
When the Mr. Rod on them mic on them harmonicas.
Mm-hmm. You have any idea those guys can play that good?
Yeah. Dude, they were doing the best they could. I popped for that.
Yeah, yeah.
How was working with Roman Reigns?
He's in the position he is for a reason. And the fans, I understand the fans' reaction for him, but they are reacting for him big time every time he goes out there. And he's the top dog, so I felt that when I was in the ring with him. And he's cool to work with. He's smooth, and he ain't panicked or rushed about nothing. And that goes a long way. At least I don't got to explain it to you, but you just feel it as soon as you get in there. You know what I mean? And so it was a good feeling. And I thought together, both of us, our styles came together real nicely, I thought. So.
Yeah, they did. Going out there with a guy like that, nervous? I mean, you're getting a good push right here, right now. I mean, obviously, you know, he won a match.
Yeah.
Didn't hurt you none. Mm. Get nervous?
I can't say nervous is the word. I understand what's going on. Like, I understand, like, okay, the company's giving me 20 minutes with their main guy, right? But also, I've been thinking about this my whole life, and I've been wanting this my whole life, and I've been wanting to be in that spot my whole life. So, to me, it's just time to do the thing, you know? And I don't mean to come off like sounding like a big shot, but it's just the truth. I've been watching wrestling since I was a kid. I want to be there. I also want to be at WrestleMania doing this and that, and I want to be against the main guys there too. So I don't think nervous is the word, but there's that excitement and that, you know, knowing what's going on.
Yeah, but, you know, like you said, to me, when I got into business, I just want to be a pro wrestler, you know, and I don't know how far to go, but obviously you want to be the best,
sure,
you know, anything you do. So, but I wasn't trying to get into business to be famous.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting into business to, you know, make a whole lot of money. Now you got to learn the business dynamics of the business,
of course,
with the territory that you're in. So those are waters you got to learn to navigate. But I just want to be in the business because I want to be a pro wrestler.
Uh-huh.
So same thing for you. But you have your goal set,
yeah,
and you're a goal-driven person, so you want to be the best you can be.
That's it, man.
If you don't believe in yourself, ain't nobody going to believe in you.
It's like, that's the truth right there. And that's served me a lot throughout. I mean, I told you I got told no 4 different times from all the people that make the decisions. But, you know, to me, they're all just steps along the way that you got to take. So,
what was that?
Sounded like a little lullaby rhyme going off, maybe?
Oh, man. I owe everybody a beer on my podcast. Every time my phone goes off, I just lost this damn thing. About an hour ago, I was asking my wife. I left it in my closet over there when I was getting one of those hats out. When my phone goes off, I owe everybody on the podcast a beer. So put that on my list of beers that owe you people out there. God dang, while you was talking and my phone went off, I'm looking at you. I seen you drop that big elbow off the top turnbuckle. I'm sure I'm not the first person that ever told you, hey, man, you have a little bit of a resemblance to Randy Macho Man Savage.
Yeah.
You get that any?
Oh, yeah, I get that all the time.
And he's a baseball player as well.
Yeah, you're right. And a huge inspiration for me as well, man. I love watching Randy Savage's work. But yeah, I mean, I get that all the time on Twitter, and I see it too. So,
but coming up as a kid, I mean, and like obviously he was influenced on you, but who else from those that kind of golden era was influential? I dig this guy, or I dig this guy's work. Earlier, Sasha Banks was over here. Eddie Guerrero was kind of her guy that she really dug.
Right. Well, Shawn Michaels was, of course, like I'm sure everybody says Shawn Michaels, right?
I mean, to me, he's the greatest performer I've ever seen in the ring. Now, Ric Flair is my favorite pro wrestler, but I mean, Shawn Michaels is the best in-ring performer that I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
They can do it all. So,
yeah, and I felt that way. And right around the time he won the belt at WrestleMania 12 was like my, I don't know how to describe it, my youth in wrestling was right at that time. And here's him living out his youthful or his boyhood dream, and which was at Anaheim Pond, by the way, where I just was. Shawn Michaels always stuck with me as, man, that guy's awesome. Just everything he does is cool. So that was my, I remember actually when I met Shawn Michaels when I was 15 or 16 years old, I had to think, what am I going to tell this guy when I finally meet him? There's a time I'm nervous. Gonna meet Shawn Michaels, and I thought all day, what am I gonna tell him? So when I get up to him, Shawn, nice to meet you. I just want to let you know, you make me want to be a wrestler. Told him that. I felt great about it. He's like, oh, thanks, kid. And that was that, or whatever. But and then sure enough, 15 years later, he's teaching me down at NXT. Right before I get called up to Monday Night Raw, he was like my coach for a couple months there.
What kind of 411 is a guy like Shawn Michaels dropping on you? I mean, because you've been in the ring now for a good while, but obviously you're talking to one of the best. So and he's one of those guys that's going to help finish the process.
Yeah.
What kind of sandpaper did he use on you?
So what I noticed was he would have us thinking outside the box, right? Like he just looks at the product from just a different perspective than anybody else, as far as I could tell, where he's thinking, why aren't the guys, I hate to throw anything out there. So anyways, why aren't the guys today connecting like they would connect back in the day? Why did everybody connect with Steve Austin? Why is not everybody not connect with so-and-so today or whoever it is? And he brings up these little points and these little intricacies of camera work and television and when you're on and things like that, that just it makes these light bulbs go off in your head and you go, oh, if you're thinking about that, oh, now I've got an idea for this. And now if I put that to use, okay, cool. So he's just, what he's doing in there is just opening everybody's mind to look at WWE wrestling in just a different light than, cause we're all getting taught the kind of the same thing, right? Just like anything else. So here's you get in his class and it's you already know that stuff. You already know how to wrestle. So let's fine tune some cool stuff there.
My memory has escaped me. What are you using right now for a finish?
I got this move. It is hooked like a suplex, and that's spin them out this way like a spinning neck breaker, pretty much. Where I got their leg hooked.
That's right.
Yeah. Call it the Drift Away.
Based on the Drifter, right?
Exactly.
How'd you come up with that?
Jeff Hardy said it to me. So, because I was the Drifter, but then that got removed from my vocabulary. I wanted to keep a piece of me along the way. And Jeff Hardy came up to me and said, you know what, man? You should call your finishing move Drift Away. I said, that's the coolest name right there for, you know what I mean? And it's a cool little thing because it's obviously it's off the Drifter. But also when I was in NXT, that was a chant that I would often hear, I guess. It's a drift away, like to the New Day clap, right? Drift away. So it's a little, you know, just keep a little piece of that with me as I go along the journey.
Tell me about your relationship with Jeff Hardy, because he's been a very interesting guy for me to watch over the, you know, shoot the past 15 years.
Yeah.
And Jeff was a guy, you know, a lot of times they weren't even pushing the Hardys, but, you know, those guys could get themselves over, and Jeff could just, even without a green light push, the guy could always get himself over. But what tripped me out about Jeff, good-looking guy, great move set. His names for all of his moves were just
Whisper in the Wind.
Whisper in the Wind. I mean, the artistic flavor to the naming of his moves, because I would be like over in a different part of the locker room, and I could hear him kind of like talking to a dude, and he's going through all these names of these – dude, mm-hmm. I had like a right hand, a stunner, a clothesline. You know, sure. Dude, I had three things.
Yeah, simple
so
man.
He's naming out all these cool-ass things. I'm like, man, this dude really thinks about this stuff. Yeah, he gives his shit good names.
And, like, who knows if he even really puts thought into it or if that's just his brain just spitting it out, you know? Like,
yeah.
He is one of those kind of eclectic, artistic – you know, he really is kind of like a rock star guy. I mean, I went and saw him perform in Nashville, actually – with his band, so you know he creates music and he's creating art all the time.
What kind of music are you playing?
Cool dude. To me, it was like a heavy rock kind of music. That's kind of what I took it as. He was the lead singer. I think he writes the lyrics and everything like that, and he's got a band behind him. So it's a cool show.
Hey man, we're at the 58-minute mark. I'm gonna call this a show. Elias, where are you on Twitter, social media, Instagram? How can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at IamEliasWWE, and that's about it, man. That's where you'll find me. If you don't find me there, hopefully I'll be on TV.
Podcast One has new shows on our new app. Check out all the cool features to help you explore our exciting new programming, like America's Lakers Podcast with Jay Moore, Sessions with Randy Jackson, So Random with Corinne Olympios, Attack Each Day, The Harbaugh's Podcast, Not Just Sports with Susie Schuster and Rich Eisen, and Sound of Success, The Dick Enberg Podcast, as well as your old favorites like The Lady Gang, Steve Austin, Shaquille O'Neal, and Adam Carolla. Get the new Podcast One app in the App Store, Google Play, or PodcastOne.com.
All right, everybody, give me to go home. Q's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off in sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Elias, WWE superstar, for coming down here and opening up a can of audio whoop ass for me a couple of weeks ago. Who wants to walk with Elias? I do, god dang it. Elias, get your stuff in. Be aggressive in the ring. You're right on the right track. Big future ahead of you. Good talking to you. Thanks for coming by the crib. And one more time before I ride off in the sunset, thank you to everybody who sent in happy birthday wishes on Instagram, Twitter, emails, questions at steveaustinshow.com, and all that stuff. Hey, I think this Thursday I'm probably going to play my conversation that I had with Bayley and Sasha Banks, two of my other favorite WWE superstars. And I had about a 35-minute conversation with those two young ladies before Bayley had to go do a personal appearance. So I'm probably going to play that interview this coming Thursday on the first half of the Steve Austin Show. And if you have questions, send them to questions at steveaustinshow.com, because I'll make the back half of that podcast a Q&A. But Sasha Banks and Bayley will be coming up. We shot the breeze, a lighthearted conversation. I really like both these young ladies. They're great in the ring. I love both of their gimmicks. They have a ton of personality. They're fun to hang out with, and they stopped by the crib. And I already played the interview with Sasha Banks, the legit boss. And right before Bayley rode off into the sunset, we recorded for about 35 minutes. So I'm playing that podcast coming up this Thursday. Now, it is a family-friendly show, but I'm playing it on the Thursday show. So send me some questions. I'll back at the rest of that episode up answering your questions that you sent in. And then coming up this Tuesday, I've got Brutus the Barber Beefcake. He's got a book coming out. And I think right now it's already on sale at BrutusBeefcake.com. But Brutus Beefcake is on the show this coming Tuesday. I had a real good time talking to that guy. I forgot how good that gimmick was. I mean, I remember how good the gimmick was, but you really kind of get caught up in a gimmick, or I did, and forgot how good of a worker Ed Leslie was. So I enjoyed talking to him. He's on the Tuesday podcast. And then We're going to talk again, and we're going to talk about his tours and time over there in Japan. But it was just a good story, man. A well-traveled guy and obviously super knowledgeable. And he was there, I believe, for the first six WrestleManias, which is unbelievable. And then he came back, I think, at WrestleMania 9. But good story, great conversation. We're talking about and creating awareness for his book, Strutting and Cutting, the Brutus Beefcake Story. Anyway, ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all the shirts that I'm wearing on previous seasons of Broken Skull Challenge and the season I'm on right now. And this Tuesday, 10-9 Central, is the season finale of Broken Skull Challenge. Set your DVRs, 10-9 Central. This Tuesday, it's the last episode of the season. Co-ed special, it's going to blow your doors off. Folks, if you're looking for a badass IPA, I got one from El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you ain't in Cali, check InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And this holiday season, if you want to give somebody a badass Christmas present, the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the new Working Man Knife, and you can find them at my new Amazon store, it would be a great way to start. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at PodcastOne.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. And speaking of Podcast One, the new Podcast One app is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play. There ain't another single podcast app like this sumbitch anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. And you can watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in the same room with them. So get to the App Store, Google Play, and download the new Podcast One app now. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.